It's time for Fox's top college football analyst.
Flat with a play action. Going to go long, and he's got a man there.
The inside story on college football without the SEC homerism.
I'm going to get it. Like a bull in a china shop.
This is Fridays with Klatt, part of Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Can you find out if Dalton Ferguson was named after Dalton from Roadhouse?
I'm not going to do that.
Thanks, Joel.
Sorry.
Appreciate you.
Brought to you on the fan by 808, the titan of Hawaiian restaurants.
All right, joining us as always on the Catlin Capital Hotline is Fox Sports College football analyst Joel Klatt. Good morning, Joel. How are you?
Doing great. What's going on, man?
You know,
we thought you were on vacation. Are you on vacation?
Yeah.
You take a little time off?
I mean, wrangling two kids that need to go to one to first grade and the other to preschool. Yeah. I mean, that's a vacation.
Time of
what
life.
Did I tell you? That's what I'm telling you. Is take care of the kids in the morning.
Time your life.
It's important.
Okay, Joel, the Open says without the SEC homerism, so I'm going to come out and ask. We've been talking about it this week. You mentioned on the show a couple weeks ago that you've been hearing from people that expansion of college football playoff to 8 is something that you've been hearing chatter about. The Athletic writes that big article this week, and the SEC is saying, well, we're not getting rid of our conference championship game, and it seems like everybody's willing to fold. What do the other – if there's one thing besides just beating them on the field – what can the other Power Four conferences do to take some of that power back from the SEC to where they stop bullying everybody around into decisions?
Have a backbone in your majority. That's what I would say. Because there is a majority.
Right.
There are, you know, more people, power brokers within the sport that want to move that direction. And all they have to say is that, hey, we're going to do it with or without you. And they're too afraid to do that because they feel like they need the SEC, and the SEC feels like that those folks that are in the majority need the SEC more than the SEC needs them. The SEC is incredibly short-sighted. Their value of their conference championship game is the highest of any conference out there. There's no doubt. However, it's not as valuable as what a quarterfinal weekend would be, even to them in particular. They're trying to kind of like hoard that value, but what they don't see is that owning, and I've told you guys this how many times in regards to the Pac-12, owning 100% of $50 is much different than owning, you know, 25% of $450. Mm-hmm. So I personally think that it's going to get to a point where the SEC will fold, only because someone's going to show them the dollars and the economics, and they're going to say, and they're going to show them that, hey, your championship game, while valuable, is actually losing you money. So it always comes down to dollars and cents. The rest of college football knows that they can't get the value out of a playoff unless the SEC is included. The SEC right now, I think short-sightedly, thinks that they're going to continue to make the money that they want to make without a quarterfinal weekend. It's a big tug of war, and right now everyone just kind of cedes to the SEC, and it's not just the success on the field. I think it's more about the fact that the SEC knows that they're incredibly valuable from a television perspective, and they don't budge off of that.
Yeah, and that's kind of the one thing that we were talking about this week as this conversation is happening, is why don't the other Power Four conferences just go to the SEC and say, fine, keep your conference game, but you're going to have to conference title game, but you're going to have to move it up a week, and we're not going to play one, and it could hurt you if your best two teams are playing in it. And then just play it that way and say, go ahead and keep it. We're just going to do our thing and have an advantageous schedule for us instead of the way you've been playing it with 8 conference games.
They won't do it. They won't agree to it. They won't be in the system. And that's the issue. The SEC is never going to put itself behind the 8 ball. Ever.
Right.
Ever. It's not like the other conferences. The Pac-12 puts itself behind the 8 ball constantly with their scheduling and everything that they do. And the SEC is not going to do that. The SEC came kicking and screaming into the playoff. The reason the playoff is so flawed is because of that conference. Because that The rest of college football had to make so many concessions to the SEC just to get them in the game. That's why we have this ridiculous figure skating style judging contest at the end of the year. You really think that all these smart minds got into a room and said to themselves, you know what's best for the sport? If we just take the four best teams in a subjective sense and take them to the playoff. No, nobody thought that was the best way. Give me a break. But that's the only way the SEC would go. Why? Because in their mind, why would they leave the BCS system when the BCS had been so good to them? Got a two-loss LSU into the national championship. Got a non-champ Alabama into the national championship. They had just won how many straight national championships outside of Florida State? I think it was like eight of the last nine BCS national championships. So the SEC was sitting at the table like, why are we budging? You know, like, y'all right. crazy. You know, and so all of a sudden, all these concessions were made. What is not public, and I can tell you guys, is that the system, the college football playoff system, actually gave the SEC $4 million more dollars per year to grandfather them in over the first 4 years of the college football playoff. This is the first year that it's actually an equal revenue split between all the Power Five conferences because of the college football playoff. They had to give them a concession of $16 million over 4 years just to get them involved, and they had to acquiesce to that ridiculous standard of best versus most deserving and conference champions. All of that. So if we go to eight, just keep in mind right now, it ain't going to be smooth. All right, so if it does expand, the stuff that's going to be given to the SEC, both behind closed doors and even out in the open of how this system is actually going to go, is going to be awful. I'm just letting you guys know that. So everyone that's like, this is an easy fix, it's easy to do it right, it's not going to be right because one of the leagues has an inordinate amount of power in this negotiation.
Is it better, Joel? I mean, overall, though, if I was a devil's advocate, I mean, is college football good because of the... Now, this is not how I feel, but the crazy subjectiveness of fan bases of saying my team's better, this guy's better, and this... Is that why college football still holds on to it so much because of years and years of voting? Remember, national championships were given before the bowl season even happened in a time in college football. Is going to eight really going to be better?
I think that that's part of it. I think that that can drive conversation, but I don't think that that's what makes college football special. I think that we as humans have an innate sense that we want to belong to something. And college football allows us to belong in a more intimate fashion than even professional sports. Because we feel it, we sense it, we lived it. It's a part of us, right? It's a part of the fabric of who we are if we went to those schools. And so we feel almost like a part of the family. It's like going to Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas Eve with your extended family. And it's just, you know, we might hate it at times, but it's what we know and we love, right? It's where we belong. And I think that's what makes college football so special is like go to all of these stadiums and you walk into these stadiums and it's kind of like a giant family. Us against them, we're part of the fabric of this university and this program. And you don't get that sense in a corporate and stale environment in an NFL stadium. And so I happen to think that that's what makes college football so great. Versus the fact that at the end we all yell and scream about which team we think is better, and we're allowed to do that because the system is flawed and the schedules are incredibly insufficient at giving us some sort of standard of who's better than who.
Yeah, and you know, with what you said about the distribution over the first 4 years of the college football playoff, I mean, it's insane that if the people in the room knew that, right, who were on the committee and making selections. Like an SEC bias is legitimate when they are literally telling them they're more important than the other four conferences that are in the conversation here. Like that's exactly what you're doing is you're saying you are so much more important. You deserve extra money so you can change your mind and join us. And how that doesn't affect the way that a committee operates or that the college football playoff as a whole operates. That's amazing to me. And it's not to say that Alabama isn't deserving of being in, but How can that not change the way that you select the teams and weigh the schedules in a sense?
Yeah, weighing the schedules is a big part of this. I happen to think that there are small little fixes that we're never going to get to because it would knock the chance of a second SEC team getting into the playoff, and they're never going to agree to something that would not allow two of their teams to go and compete for the national championship. Right. So that's kind of where we're at this point. Again, I'm not a fan of the 8-team playoff just in general. I don't think that it's best for the sport. I don't think it retains the value of the regular season. I understand I'm in the minority in that. I think that there are some small fixes that we could do the current system that would make it better than an 8-team playoff and also give more of the access that people are yearning for to more teams around the country.
So finally, before we let you go, your vote last week, you kind of dropped a little bit on it. You did pick Kyler Murray. I'm assuming that was your choice. I thought it was the right choice. It's who I thought won the Heisman, and deservedly so. I'm going to put together a quick quarterback list, and you being a quarterback and understanding value moving to the next level. This is just a hypothetical situation, but if you took Kyler Murray, Tua, Dwayne Haskins, Will Greer, and Justin Herbert as a group that were really going to go to the NFL draft. Now, I know Kyler's going to play for the A's. But if you had that opportunity, who would you start your franchise with knowing that I want a guy that can translate to the NFL and maybe be the guy that would lead me to a Super Bowl potentially?
The current NFL, I think I would rank them like this. I would say Tua would be my first pick. Dwayne would be my second. I would probably take a Kyler-Greer combination and then Herbert after that.
Hmm. All right. So Justin Herbert coming back for another year then. Joel Klatt breaking that news. Want to do that?
I'm not sure if he will or not. I do think that this is an incredibly weak class of quarterbacks. Yeah. And it behooves you as a quarterback with any amount of value to leave when there is a weak class, you know, a thin class. And I personally think Justin should leave, but that's more of a monetary situation and a value situation versus the reps. If you were to ask me what prepares you best to succeed in the NFL, I would always tell you to stay in school and get more reps. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're going to ask me, like, well, what about just maximizing your value at the time in which you have it to go to the NFL draft, then I would say as soon as you have the value to be in the first round or the top 15 picks, you go immediately. So the fact that those are two different answers, I think, is what makes this such an interesting and tough decision for these players. I don't envy Justin Herbert's decision. I know that sounds crazy because you're like, what do you mean? You can either be a star quarterback in the college football ranks or you can go and be a top 15 pick in the NFL draft. Yeah, I get it. Both options are good. But at the same time, he's going to be scrutinized an awful lot on each side of those. And so we'll see what he does.
When it comes to the bowl games, Joel, Gardner Minshew just mentioned, he said that, you got guys all around you. I would never skip a game. They're fighting their tails off. Coaches, you need to be out there one last time. Would you tell these guys to skip bowl games if it was a factor in choosing the NFL and getting ready for the NFL in their career?
It's a good question. So there are only a few players in the country that I feel like have established their value and it's not going to change for the NFL draft. Everybody else, every time they step on the field, is impacting their value, mm-hmm. whether they are choosing to be on the field or choosing not to be on the field, and then their performance once they are out there. If you are still a player that can affect his draft stock in a positive sense, I think you should always go play because the tape is the great equalizer. A guy like Will Greer, I think, should go play because I think he's a fringe first-round guy. So, what are you retaining? If you go and show out in the bowl game, maybe that's the film. Maybe you make one of the throws that increase your value 10 picks, 15 picks, 20 picks in the NFL draft. You never know when that opportunity is going to arise. His body of work, I don't think, has solidified him in any spot in the draft. So now he's leaving it up to chance. If you're a guy like Nick Bosa, I'm like, man, what have you got to prove? You know, like, you're solid. You're good. That's why I think that this whole conversation, there's always going to be too many kids skip their bowl games. There's going to be too many kids leave early. And they just don't quite understand what's going on in that value proposition. For me, I think it's only a few guys out there that I would say, yeah, you should probably not play in your bowl game. But that's strictly a sense of an individual value proposition and what that individual's value is to the NFL and how they can impact that. That's aside from the commitment to your teammates and that issue.
All right, Joel, what bowl game are you on?
The Holiday Bowl.
Oh, look at that. The Holiday Bowl. You got a little Pac-12 action. Your first Pac-12 game of the year. Congrats, man. It only took
the bowl.
First West Coast game of the year. I saw some. I saw Pac-12, one of the executives at a bowl event. I was down in San Diego. He was like, hey, how many games did you do? And I was like, I didn't do one. And he was like, you didn't do a Pac-12 game? I was like, sorry, Brozif. No.
He doesn't do it.
Oh. You call the Pac-12 exec Brozif? Yeah, I love Brozif. That.
Yeah. They must be on real good terms.
I mean, after this year, they deserve it.
Hey, and finally, you had Christmas Vacation as number one. Yeah. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Yes or no?
No, that's why I didn't put it on there.
What?
Die Hard is an action movie takes place around Christmas. It's not a Christmas movie.
It's at a Christmas party. Santa was there.
No. This is insane. It happens to be a Christmas party. The same movie could take place whether it was Halloween, Thanksgiving, Easter, whatever holiday.
It would have been a great Easter movie then.
Every movie that I listed depends on the holiday of Christmas.
I love your list.
You see?
Yeah, I know. Like, I'm right there.
People kept saying, like, Die Hard. I'm like, no, Die Hard's just a movie.
Yep.
Die Hard lives whether Christmas is there or not. My list, every one of those movies depend on Christmas.
Right, see? It's like how I sit with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Thanksgiving. But it works. It works, see?
I don't know.
Dusty's bitter. He's like, oh, I can't handle this.
No, Die Hard's a Christmas movie.
It is. It is.
It's not a Christmas movie.
Joel? Right? It is.
Okay.
It is. Now that you think it is, if you want to include it in a Christmas movie conversation or ranking list, you must pay me $4 million every year for 4 years.
Well, we already do to have you come on the show every single week, right?
What more does this guy want?
Joel, thank you very much, man. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, my man.
See you guys.
Joel Klatt, Fox Sports College Football Analyst on the Catlin Capital Hotline every Friday at 7:30. Yes. Brought to you by our friends at 808, the Titan of Hawaiian Restaurants.